This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Over the weekend, a defensive President Bush cited the discovery of what may be two mobile bioweapons labs in answer to the questions that's beginning to haunt his administration. Where are Iraq's weapons of mass destruction? Senior U.S. military commanders now say that Iraqi forces did not have stockpiles of artillery shells and rockets filled with poison gas ready to use. Intelligence reports that battlefield commanders had been authorized to unleash chemical weapons just weren't accurate. No anthrax or VX has been found. In fact, no weapons of mass destruction at all. A new and bigger team is going into Iraq to look for missing stockpiles, and serious questions are being asked about what the American people and the United Nations were told about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. What was described as rock-hard intelligence, was that simply wrong? Did analysts color their assessments to tell the administration what they thought it wanted to hear? Did White House staff focus on intelligence that supported the case for war while overlooking evidence to the contrary? If American intelligence got this critical issue wrong, how can it be believed on Iran or North Korea? If you have questions about anything you've heard about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, give us a phone call. Our phone number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Our first guest on this issue is NPR's Tom Jelton, who's with us here in Studio 3, our national security correspondent. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Neil.
We've heard a lot of rhetoric on all sides over the past few weeks on this issue. What do we actually know? What's been found?
As you mentioned in the intro, Neil, the most damning, as it were, thing that has been found are these two trailers, which are clearly a biological laboratory of some kind. It's theoretically possible that they could have an innocent use. The equipment that they contain would be consistent, for example, with a mobile laboratory to produce hydrogen. Hydrogen is needed, and it would be needed in this case, for example, for weather balloons that would then be linked to as kind of spotters for artillery units. And this, it seems, is the cover story, as it were, for these trailers. Now, what the CIA is saying, however, after extensive analysis of these trailers, is that it would make no sense to have hydrogen production facilities in trailers. That this is not something that's illegal. It's not something that needs to be covert. It's not something that needs to be mobile. Why would you go to the great expense of setting up a hydrogen production laboratory in a trailer? And for that reason, CIA analysts and other intelligence officials have concluded that the only logical explanation for these trailers is that they would be used to make biological agents for biological weapons. They did not find any traces in these two trailers of those biological agents. However, they did find in one of them the presence of a caustic substance, which could have suggested that they had been decontaminated after they were used.
Over the past few days, there have been some extraordinary communications on this. A group of former and current CIA analysts issued statements on their website saying that they felt their information had been misused. Then George Tenet, the director of Central Intelligence, issued an extraordinary defense of his agency's work.
Well, Neil, it's really not, I'm not surprised that this stuff is happening, because I have been in touch personally with a number of intelligence officials who've been working on Iraq-related stuff, and they basically are not happy campers right now. There was a feeling going back weeks that their intelligence was being pushed beyond the limits that they really wanted it pushed to. What you have happening here, Neil, is intelligence officials are not supposed to be, by virtue of their role, are not supposed to be committed to a particular policy, because it is very important for intelligence officials to tell it like it is, to give the policymakers information that they can trust, that they can rely on. And what I've heard from a number of intelligence officials is that when they went to people in the policy community with their findings.
Policy community, let's just be clear, that means the upper...
Well, that'd be like the Secretary of Defense and people around him, for example. The people who were, people in this administration, or at the National Security Council, people in this administration who were preparing the policy of going to war in Iraq. When they came up with conclusions that did not adequately underlie the policy justifications for going to war, they would be told to go back to the data and take another look at it and come back, you know, in a week or so. There was constant pressure on them to come up with the intelligence to support the policy, and that they did not like. And now that the developments have not supported the policy, as it were, we're hearing from a lot of these intelligence officials, you mentioned some in your question, who are really unhappy and feel that their work was misused.
Mm-hmm. Now, misused, in other words, when they presented assessments to the White House or the Defense Department or the State Department, for that matter, they were sent back to say, well, look at this again. Or, you know, were they were there some people within those agencies who were saying, you know, look, we'll get a better hearing if we tilt it this way?
You know, these guys serve certain masters, and you know they know what their masters want them to report. One intelligence official said to me that when he and his colleagues reported their findings in such a way that the policy makers did not like them, the attitude was, it's there. If you haven't found it, you must be incompetent. Mm-hmm. So there was a kind of the pressure on him was not just a political pressure. It was also kind of a demeaning pressure in the sense of, you know, everybody knows it's there. Why haven't you found it? If you haven't found it, there must be something wrong with your data collection, your analysis.
Throughout the administration, every official who spoke publicly at the Pentagon, at the State Department, at the White House, many of the generals who spoke from the podium in Qatar at various points, all of them said they had never seen such unanimity of intelligence services and intelligence assessments except on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. This suggests that, you know, where were complaints about our stuff has been misused before the war?
Well, you did hear a little bit about it. I mean, for example, around the time of Colin Powell's presentation at the United Nations, I know a number of intelligence officials at that time were saying that he was sort of going a little bit further than they felt comfortable. I do want to emphasize one thing, Neil, and that is that these people that I'm quoting were themselves also convinced that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction and remain convinced of that now. Their complaint is not so much that they were told to say something that was not true, but that it was that what their findings were exaggerated, their findings were amplified to an extent that they're not comfortable with.
Let's get some listeners involved. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address TOTN@npr.org. And let's begin with Jim, who's on the line with us from Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Yes, hello. I just returned from Baghdad. A couple weeks ago, I was embedded with the 101st Airborne, 3rd of the 187th.
So you were a reporter?
Yeah, I'm a freelance photographer, and I was stringing for UPI and Frankfurter Allgemeine. And it just occurred to me as I was hearing this, we found a very similar trailer in southern Baghdad. And I photographed it, and they documented it, and then it went up the chain of command, and then I never heard anything else about it. This was a mobile trailer, a military trailer, and it was full of autoclaves and glass scientific instruments. And our battalion surgeon was there, Major Diaz. And I spoke with him about it, and I said, you know, could this be just like a mobile blood work or a toxicology lab? And he was like, I'm not finding anything in here that tells me that they were doing blood work in this van. So he photographed everything as well, and then we never heard anything more about it. And so I was wondering if that ever made it out, because communication for me was really tenuous out of there. And at the same time...
Well, why don't we deal with one thing at a time, Jim, okay?
Jim, can I ask you, how large was this a trailer or was it a truck?
It was a trailer. It required its own mover.
And was it, how large was it?
Oh, geez, it was good 20 foot long. It was about a medium-sized trailer truck. It was a dual wheel.
We'd heard about two of these trailers, one found up in the northern part of the country, another around Baghdad, but it was reported stripped. This does not sound like the same kind of... yours wasn't stripped, was it, Jim?
No, this wasn't stripped, and Alpha Company parked it out in front of their compound and surrounded it with barbed wire.
It sounds from what you're saying, Jim, that it was of a different type of trailer than what the CIA has described as having a likely explanation that it was used for making biological agents. This may be more of a... The CIA is contrasting, for example, laboratories and production facilities, and production facilities have very specific equipment, and what you're talking about may have been something more like a laboratory. They have actually found a variety of vehicles in Iraq that had some kind of military use, similar to the one you're talking about. What they have focused on primarily are the facilities that seem to be for producing agents, and it's possible that while the vehicle that you're talking about, you're describing, had some kind of suspect use, it may have been for something other than actual production.
Yeah, quite possibly. It could have been almost a hazmat materials detection type of thing, because they had autoclaves, and I'm sure they had petri dishes and all the things you'd need to test for the presence of an agent.
Right.
Yep. And Iraqi forces, as we continually found out, were equipped to fight in conditions of chemical warfare. There's just no chemical weapons have been found.
Yeah, fairly poorly equipped, I might add. I got a chance to look at a lot of their equipment, and I'm prior service, and frankly, if they had faced an enemy that had used real chemical warfare, they'd have had a lot of casualties just from their own equipment failure. It was actually pretty pathetic. I actually wrote a short story about that at one point, but their gas masks were defective, almost every one I picked up, and it wasn't even remotely close to anything we were equipped with. But also on the whole search for the chemical weapons thing, I also like to point out is we're very thin on the ground there. We went in there with 250,000 people, basically with a count of everyone who was sorting mail to on a ship to, you know, cleaning the mess hall down in Camp Doha. When we actually went into that country, there was maybe about 10,000 effective combat troops that led that charge, and it's a huge country, so I think patience might be called for here.
Okay, Jim, thanks very much.
Okay.
Tom Gelton, that's one of the things that administration officials say, that, you know, indeed we had Secretary Rumsfeld, among others, say maybe Saddam Hussein did destroy the weapons before the war. Maybe they were moved outside of the country. Maybe they were hidden in recesses where they can never be found. In any case, clearly, though, they were not ready for use in a conflict, which was one of the things that was said, and clearly one of the other things that was said before the war was that this imminent threat of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, coupled with its connection to terrorist groups, which is another issue, that's what justified the idea of a war now.
Well, you asked at the beginning, Neil, what do we know? And there were two claims, as it were, that I think are in most serious jeopardy right now. And one is, I've been told flatly by people involved in this search that whether they existed or did not exist, we will not know for some time. But they clearly were not in the places where the United States expected them to be. So that piece of intelligence is clearly suspect, that where the United States thought the weapons were, they were not there. And the second one you also mentioned, and that is that we were told that Iraqi commanders had actual operational control over chemical weapons, particularly in frontline areas around Baghdad. It is possible that they in fact had those weapons and buried them, but what I've been told is that it's almost inconceivable that in the short amount of time they had before U.S. troops overran them, that they would have been able to bury everything. So it now appears that claim was wrong. It's getting very hard to believe that those Iraqi commanders did in fact have operational control of chemical weapons to the extent that we were told they did.
NPR's Tom Gelton, our national security correspondent, was with us here in Studio 3A. He's got to go over to the Pentagon now to pick up his own mask. They were issued today, weren't they?
That's right. Reporters at the Pentagon are going to be protected like everyone else.
When we come back from a short break, we're going to be joined by a professor of national security policy at the National War College. Also later, Senator for Kit Bond of Missouri will be joining us, and Amy Smithson of the Henry L. Stimson Center to talk about the issue of where are Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the continued hunt for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, thus far fruitless. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining our conversation now is Marvin Ott, a professor of national security policy at the National War College. He joins us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C., and it's good of you to be with us.
My pleasure.
As we were talking earlier with Tom Gjelten, clearly at least some aspects of the intelligence on Iraqi weapons of mass destruction was wrong. How bad does it look?
Well, first let me just say that Dan Gjelten said the whole issue that's arisen is very predictable. You know, your intelligence by definition, particularly when you're trying to gather it in a hostile environment under a totalitarian regime, you're trying to get at stuff that they're hiding, is going to be tough to get. Your information is going to be problematic, it's going to be fragmented, it's going to be circumstantial, it's going to be degraded in all kinds of different ways. And then you combine that with an administration that is very forward-leaning, pushing very hard preemptive war policy, looking for justification from intelligence for the action they've already decided to take. And that makes it really tough for the intel people. So the fact that they're reporting they were under lots of pressure is no surprise. At this point, my own judgment, I'll be happy to sort of go into it a little bit, will probably be that when the record finally is all told, it will show that, yes, the intel people, the intelligence collectors and analysts were put under very heavy pressure. Did they distort or trim their analysis? Probably not. Did the leadership of the intelligence community itself sort of allow the information to be distorted and misused? And I'm thinking particularly here of George Tenet, who I know pretty well. I'm going to guess the answer will be probably not. And we're going to be left probably with where you just posed your issue, that it's going to turn out that a lot of the information just wasn't very good.
So they were just wrong? Probably.
That's a high possibility. I mean, you're wrong, and, you know, when you make it a flat statement, that's a little tough because, you know, you're dealing...
Well, the administration and intelligence officials before were making pretty flat statements before the war.
If the question is, were the flat statements that, you know, without a doubt, they've got it, statements that indicated that these weapons were deployed in the field, were ready to go, some of that... The word, you know, the adjective wrong probably will apply. Whether the overall judgment that Saddam Hussein's regime had these weapons, had been trying to develop them, were actively trying to sort of, you know, bring foreign sources in to augment an arsenal, that remains to be seen.
Let's get a listener's question. Klaus joins us from Encinitas, California.
Thank you very much, Neil, for taking my call. Very quickly, I have one question, one technical question to your guest or guests who are still there. And starting out with a quick comment, I think it's more or less also a problem with our perception over here, because I distinctively remember way back already in September and October, there were small reports, and mostly from BBC and other news corporations, that the CIA vehemently denied that there were supporting these statements by Wolfowitz and by Rumsfeld at that point already. And this was just not broadcasted as publicly over here in the media as it was in the rest of Europe. And Mark Hertzgard, the author of a book called The Eagle's Shadow, he also claims that part of our problem here is if we don't have a strong opposition party, our media, our actual U.S. media is not inclined to ask all the tough questions.
Klaus, that's a question about media, not about intelligence. Could you get to that?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and here's my question regarding the intelligence. I remember way back in the 70s, we already claimed with our spy satellites we were able to distinguish, you know, the color of the shoelaces of Leonard Brezhnev and all those other things. How is it possible that with our superior technology, which constantly comes up lately, why we won the war and so on, how is it possible that we are not able to get them the intelligence Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and everybody else is talking about producing it already beforehand? You know, as an example, Kennedy, when he found, I mean, way back in the 60s, he found the first photographs of the Russians moving the missiles towards Cuba.
Well, those were U-2 photographs.
The next day, he came out with the photographs and said to the public, here it is. Here is the evidence. Why did the administration never came up with the evidence like that?
Thanks for the phone call. And Marvin Ott, I think Klaus is accelerating the process of what happened with the U-2 and the missiles in Cuba a little bit. But
Let me just quickly comment, if I might. Without getting into the specific capabilities of U.S. satellites and all the rest of it, keep in mind that the world and regimes like Saddam Hussein's included have had a long time to learn about the capabilities of U.S. intelligence, particularly technical capabilities, particularly from satellites. This has all been reported in great detail. And as a result, if you're a regime that wants to hide something from these satellite capabilities that the United States has, you develop ways of doing that. And so, it was one thing when you could overfly Cuba in the very early days of the Cold War, and you could take pictures of unprotected sites. But we're now dealing with stuff that's being very carefully hidden because the people that are the target of these satellites know exactly what the capabilities of the satellites are. So the fact that we can't come up with photographs that show somebody holding something and say, aha, there it is not surprising. It would be, in fact, surprising if we could produce that.
And let's get another caller. Madonna joins us from St. Louis.
Hi. We were all sitting around watching the ball game the other night, and we were commenting on how we haven't found any weapons of mass destruction yet. And one of our buddies just laughed and goes, oh, that's because we haven't gotten them there yet. And we all had a big laugh about that. But not to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but what is the real possibility that, you know, we would be pressured so much to produce them that we would, in fact, produce them and set them in the desert and then say, aha, we've discovered them. And what is the real chance of that actually occurring?
Marvin Ott?
I think almost zero. And the reason, just to give you the cynical reason, is that the people who might be tempted to do that know that the U.S. system leaks in so many ways, there's so many ways that information flows through it, it would simply be impossible to mount some sort of clandestine operation like that, plant something, invite the world press to come and see it, and then have huge publicity surrounding it, and having all sorts of people that would be suspicious, like yourself, like many others, you know, checking every angle for it to remain secret. It just simply wouldn't be possible. And certainly you couldn't count on it. And so, you know, first of all, I give the senior officials more credit for honesty and integrity than the scenario suggests. But that aside, it just simply wouldn't work.
Marvin Ott, thanks very much for your time today.
My pleasure.
Marvin Ott, a professor of national security policy at the National War College. He was with us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. Yesterday, Senator John Warner, the chair of the Armed Services Committee, announced his committee would begin an investigation into why the U.S. has failed to find evidence of chemical or biological weapons in Iraq. Senator Warner, a Republican from Virginia, said he wanted to work in conjunction with another Senate committee, the Intelligence Committee, on that investigation. Joining us now to talk about how this issue will be dealt with on Capitol Hill is Senator Christopher Bond, a Republican from Missouri. He's a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee and joins us by phone from his office on Capitol Hill. And thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, Dale. I'm also a member of the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, so I come at this from two angles. And I am on the Intelligence Committee with my good friend and colleague, Senator Warner from Virginia. We call him the Virginia Squire.
Well, in this case, should there be a joint investigation, an investigation at all?
Well, there is clearly there will be investigations in the Intelligence Committee. We conduct oversight hearings, and we'll be looking into this. I think that Senator Warner has proposed a I gather this is an open hearing, but certainly there will be hearings, and if there are some of it that can be disclosed without compromising sources or means of gathering information, I think that would certainly be informative. A lot of the things that we had learned in the Intelligence Committee were frankly made available by the Secretary of State, and he announced them. And when he announced the mobile weapons labs, for example, we've now found what the mobile weapons labs. So what he has stated publicly has been pretty much confirmed, I think, by the information that's been available in the broad media.
Well, he also said a lot of other things about massive stocks of VX and anthrax. None of that's been found.
Well, I think all along, as I recall, the statements that have been made is that, number one, they have the means of producing it. When you produce one of these highly potent either biological or chemical weapons, the weapons, the material itself, can be hidden in something no larger than a suitcase and put in the back of somebody's drawer or buried in the ground. And I believe that there had been a constant theme that we knew that Saddam Hussein was trying to avoid detection and was taking steps once anything was developed of hiding it. We know for a fact that he's used these weapons on his own people and on others. So there's no question that it's been there and that he had the capability to make it. And if somebody will come forward, probably we will know. Recently, obviously, there's a story that an Iraqi scientist was described in the Washington Post as of today, has said he's decentralized it. And he's carefully embedded the production facilities in dual-use facilities, so they could be making fertilizers one day and deadly nerve agents the next day at the same facility.
Yeah, and this may be totally correct, but it does seem, Senator, and I'm sure you know this too. I mean, it seems like this is the 17th time we've heard such a story since the end of the war, and this time they would find that this barrel was full of, you know, VX, and it turned out to be pesticide. But it really comes down to the credibility of American intelligence at this point. If your committee was, you know, if evidence was presented saying that there are nuclear weapons now available to Iran or what's happening in North Korea, a lot of people would say, given on the basis of what we found out from Iraq, how can we believe this stuff?
Well, what we knew about Iraq was we knew that they had used weapons of mass destruction, biological and chemical weapons. We knew, and Colin Powell laid out for the UN the kinds of mobile laboratories we had. We found those mobile laboratories. He played for the United Nations a recording that I had to rely on the translation, but I'm sure others could understand it themselves.
And how the
officers in charge were making sure that they got all of the hard evidence out of the facilities and into other locations.
But they haven't found so much as a single shell filled with VX. I mean, we were told this stuff was ready for imminent use. American troops went over there dressed in their mop suits to prevent against weapons of mass destruction.
Well, that's true, and we haven't found Saddam Hussein either. But that doesn't mean he didn't exist. The fact is, it's a big country, and they've got a lot of ways of hiding it. He had what we would now call a just-in-time inventory system, where whenever he wanted to do it, he could convert one of his existing facilities to make just a little bit of it, transfer it, and it was long gone, and it was the facility was back to making. Fertilizers or pesticides or whatever they want, but you know that's not surprising. But I think it's clear that we will in hearings, some closed and perhaps we can have some open. We'll be talking about that information, and we certainly will pursue aggressively in our closed hearings all of these subjects.
Senator Bond, thanks very much.
Thank you, sir.
Republican Christopher Bond is a member of the Senate from the state of Missouri, a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and as he told us, on the Defense Committee as well. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And with us now is Amy Smithson. She's director of the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the Henry L. Stimson Center, and she joins us by phone from her office here in Washington. Amy Smithson, good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
A pleasure to be with you.
If there were large-scale chemical and biological weapon stocks, a large-scale program to develop those weapons and construct them, why haven't American troops and inspectors been able to find it?
I think you've heard two things in the previous conversation that I can hang my hat on. One is that they were spread very thin and still are spread very thin. It's one thing that I would fault the administration for is not planning perhaps as good for the aftermath of the war as they did for the conduct of the war, particularly planning for how to move in large numbers of individuals, including international inspectors, inviting them back into this process in order to conduct this hunt in a more comprehensive way. The other thing that I picked up on earlier was the political pressure that was exerted on our intelligence officials. Oddly enough, I've heard any number of former United Nations officials say that they had been on the receiving end of pressure from U.S. intelligence analysts when they were sent in to find something that intelligence analysts were sure was in Iraq, but in fact turned out not to be there.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that given what we know now, and as you said, it's a big country, but given that what you know now, that the effect of all of this stuff was that the intelligence was hyped?
It very well could have been hyped. It's uncomfortable to say that, but political pressures are brought to bear in circumstances such as this. And I have a great deal of empathy for someone who's looking at disparate dots of information and trying to draw, you know, a conclusion about them, particularly when it's not something that you're seeing firsthand on the ground. One of your callers mentioned that it was really surprising that with all of our intelligence capabilities, we couldn't pinpoint this stuff better. But as a matter of fact, it is terribly difficult, particularly when it comes to pinpointing a biological weapons program, to do so, because the capabilities, the equipment and the skill sets, and even a lot of the materials are the same as would be used for legitimate commercial purposes.
Yet the question that arises, and we won't have time to address it in this segment, is then why did the administration officials come out so certainly and said they absolutely have it?
I'm afraid that's a question you'll have to pose to the individuals who were saying those things. I will note, however, that recently Undersecretary of State Bolton came out with an argument that the intellectual capacity and the capability to make these weapons was perhaps sufficient justification to go to war.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the threshold that we're now setting, quite frankly, I can think of a lot of allies that we could go to combat against. Intellectual capacity and...
Amy, we're going to have to stop it right there because we have to take a break, but we'll come back with more questions for you. And also Jane Harmon, a congresswoman from California, will join us on this issue. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, President Bush says freer trade could lead to prosperity and freedom in the Middle East. The president is meeting with Arab leaders in Egypt. We'll discuss the role that economic reform might play in transformation of the region's politics. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today, though, we're talking about the continued hunt for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Our guest is Amy Smithson, director of the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the Henry L. Stimson Center here in Washington. And joining us now from Capitol Hill, it's Congresswoman Jane Harmon of California, who's the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee. And good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Nice to be back on the show.
Thank you. And I wonder, just talking with Amy Smithson a moment ago, do you think that the intelligence that Congress, the American people, the United Nations was given before the war on this issue, was it hyped?
We don't know enough yet to answer that question. Certainly what has been discovered in Iraq is meager. disagree with the president that finding two mobile labs capable of making biological weapons, but no trace of the weapons, means that we've found an adequate amount of WMD to satisfy the claim that we made before undertaking military action. It's not adequate. But I believe that we may find more. It's a good thing that 1,400 more people are arriving today, that's my understanding, to begin to look for it. I hope we welcome in the international community. I agree with the prior speaker about that, to help us look. But in addition to that, I just would point out that intelligence, by definition, is human analysis of facts and trends. So we need to understand better how the human judgments were made about the WMD, and that is precisely what Congress is proposing to do. I've heard that the Senate is considering joint hearings. Last week, Porter Goss, who's the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, I'm the ranking Democrat, and I sent a letter to George Tenet saying that we want to review in detail the components of the judgments reached on the WMD and whether the dissenting analytic perspectives were voiced and what weight was given to those dissents so that we understand better how the judgment calls were made. And then I think we'll have a better picture and can answer your question.
Politicization of the process, if that's what happened, is very serious.
It's very serious. I hope it did not happen. I want us to find the WMD. I supported the authorization of use of force, but my primary reason, and I think many others felt as I did, was Saddam's willingness to use WMD against his own people and against Americans and American allies in the region, and also the understanding based on the intelligence that we were shown, and Colin Powell, as you said, declassified a lot of this at the UN,
mm-hmm.
that he was aggressively pursuing the development of nuclear weapons.
Can you take a call with one of your constituents? Well, I'm not sure he's actually a constituent, but he's from Garden Grove. That's nearby.
Close by.
All right. Garden Grove, California. Conrad's on the line with us.
Hi. How you guys doing today?
All right.
You know, my question is deals with the borders themselves. And, you know, if Saddam's son can load up a 18-wheeler with $1 billion in cash and cross the border unnoticed, why couldn't they move a couple nukes the same way with Saddam riding shotgun?
I think they did find that money. At least that's what we were told. But were Iraq's borders, is it possible that this material was, or at least some of it, Congresswoman moved across the border somewhere?
Well, I'm concerned about this. Certainly Saddam did have WMD. Certainly he used it against his own people. That's not disputed. And there were huge gaps in what he accounted for in 1998 when the first team of UN inspectors left and what we believed he had prior to that. So let's start with the fact that this did exist. It's counterintuitive to think he would have destroyed all of it and not told anyone about that when obviously huge numbers of U.S. and British troops were massed at his border with the intention to invade. I mean, it's a kind of bizarre behavior. So I think a working hypothesis ought to be that it could be buried deep underground. Chemical and biological weapons do not have a signature the way radiological weapons do, so you have to dig it up to find it. Or that, just as the caller said, it could have been transferred, or some of it, some form across porous borders to Iran and possibly to Syria. Again, we'd have to find that out by knowing who drove the trucks or who had knowledge of this. So this is going to be tricky. Why we could not have had better intelligence during the ramp-up of the war about where this stuff was moving is another question I need to have answered. But I am of the mode, at least for the moment, that we need to find this stuff. Whoever buried it or transferred it can dig it up or find it and use it against Iraqis, those in the region, and Americans.
I will let you go in just a minute, Congresswoman. I know you're very busy, but if on the basis of what we've been told, at least some aspects of the intelligence were clearly incorrect, what should be done about this?
Well, I think that's we know that there were forged documents from Niger on which I think British intelligence officials relied. I think we need to find out.
And the president of the United States.
Hmm?
And the president of the United States relied on that.
I think they came to us through Britain. I'm not excusing America either. We need to understand that. Again, intelligence is a series of human judgments. and we need to be certain that what goes in is as reliable as possible. That's something we count on our intelligence community to deliver to us. And I think this investigation that is now starting is going to have a cathartic effect, because we're going to make certain that the systems we use are tested and work better. I'm just hopeful, though. My bottom line is that if that WMD is somewhere, we find it quickly. It would be enormous. It would be catastrophic to have waged this war for the primary purpose of disarming Saddam Hussein, and then not to have actually eliminated these weapons and to have them show up in the hands of those who would do us harm in the near or medium term.
Congresswoman Jane Harman, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jane Harman, a Democrat from California, ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, and she spoke to us from Capitol Hill. Amy Smithson of the Stimson Center is still with us. And Amy, I think the Congresswoman's last point and the credibility of U.S. intelligence, those are huge issues right now.
They're very large issues, particularly when the U.S. government is making some saber-rattling statements about other countries around the world and the weapons of mass destruction capabilities that they may have. If the intelligence doesn't bear out here, and I'm not sure what exact time frame might be considered okay, drop dead if you haven't found it by this
right
time. Yeah, if it doesn't bear out here, then what types of judgments will the rest of the international community be making about the assertions of the U.S. government and what policies the U.S. government would pursue with regard to those countries.
Mm-hmm. Let's take an email question. And I think this essentially restates something you said earlier. Noel Silberberg in Florida writes, why did Saddam resist the inspections for so long if he did not have WMDs? Why would he not make a show of letting the inspectors run around freely? It doesn't make sense that Saddam would allow himself to be deposed over nothing.
There are going to be some interesting tales that emerge as gradually, and I think this will take place over time, individuals who are already in the custody of coalition forces and others who will come into custody in the future start talking. We know for certain that Saddam Hussein did have chemical weapons. We know for certain that he was seriously pursuing nuclear weapons capability and had made a great deal of progress toward a biological weapons capability, in that he went to extensive lengths to hide all of this from the international community. Exactly why may be known only to a few people. So I think we're going to have to be a bit patient and wait for these tales to emerge. It's not easy to be patient, though, when so much was done based on these intelligence assertions.
Amy Smithson, thanks very much. We will return to this subject.
Thank you.
Amy Smithson is director of the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the Henry L. Stimson Center, and she was with us by phone from her office in Washington.